Now, Donald Trump hasn't had many good weeks in the White House, but this one has been worse than most. Here's a quick recap of new problems to land on the Oval Office desk in the last 7 days. The FBI are investigating ties between his campaign and Russia. That was confirmed. His Supreme Court pick isn't sounding particularly deferential to the White House's policy ambitions. Overnight, it emerged that the repeal of Obamacare, it's one of the central policy planks of Trump, it could be about to founder amid internal Republican squabbles. And there's more as well. The big ticket problems are mounting for the White House. And here with me to pick it all apart is Stephen Knowlton, Professor of Journalism at DCU. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How would you characterize the last week for Donald Trump?
Almost certainly the worst week of his presidency. He has either had outright failures or failed to secure wins on four or five different fronts. So, yeah, it's the worst week of his presidency, I think.
If we were to look at the list of obstacles he's faced and failed to overcome, what are they?
Well, the biggest one is the Obamacare repeal vote, which they had hoped to bring to the floor of the House for a full vote Thursday. They didn't have the votes, so they put it off. It may come up again later Friday.
If I don't get my way, I'm moving on. We leave Obamacare in place.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people who are going to lose their health care, a lot of people who are going to see their premiums rise will be cheering.
Yep.
But there'll be Republicans who really wanted rid of it altogether who'll be unhappy that it should continue.
Well, as Trump said in one of his most memorable quotes, who knew health care was so complicated? The CBO, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, determined 24 million people would lose their health care. That was based on Monday's plan. It's been revised a couple of times since then. Some new information from the CBO out this morning says 24 million will still lose their health care under the revised version, and we don't know what else may be offered up during the day today.
And yet the biggest roadblock to his repeal going through are the really hard right,
yep,
who don't think he's gone far enough?
Well, he's in a mess. He has the so-called Freedom Caucus, which is about 30 or 35 people who have run from extremely conservative districts, who have always been suspicious of Donald Trump because he's a New York liberal, they think. And they want a simple repeal. And that's what they're running on. And at the moment, they appear to be more afraid of their own constituents than they are of Donald Trump.
So they are not fraternizing?
They weren't as of midnight, you know, a few hours ago. We don't know.
Now, to what extent is he slipping stuff under the radar? Because I read that over 2,000 bills have actually gone through Congress while all this is going on. Is there stuff that we should be paying more attention to rather than the headlines?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's always an enormous amount of stuff, but there's a huge Washington press corps that's tracking this. And if you read enough Washington news, there's not, that I know of, an awful lot of stuff. There's not a lot of big stuff that has gone through yet.
Now, at the beginning of the week, we saw the House Intelligence Committee hearings with James Comey and Admiral Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitively said there was no wiretap or surveillance of Trump in Trump Tower. End of story.
Yeah.
He's tried to salvage a bit from that because of this third party. If you're watching somebody else and you hear a third party who happens to be American, happens to be a pal of Trump's or somebody involved in his campaign, that kind of justifies his paranoia?
Well, I mean, how many times in Donald Trump's long history has he apologized and said he was wrong? You can count him on one hand and probably fewer than that. He doesn't apologize. He learned from Roy Cohn, never apologize, never surrender, etc.
What was interesting watching the committee is that this so-called bipartisan committee, where they cast aside their differences and try to get to the truth, it was utterly partisan, to the point that they were, the Republicans, trying to salvage a little bit of something for Donald Trump and failing again and again and again.
Yeah. The two California leaders of the committee, the Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes and Adam Schiff, are polar opposites on stuff. Schiff put out a very nice opening statement, sort of detailing all the possible connections with in the opening statement in the Comey hearings. And Nunes, who was on the Trump campaign team and dutifully, you know, ran over and reported to Trump without telling his committee that there might be some incidental communication. And then Schiff went on there and said, no, I've seen a fair bit of stuff and it's not incidental at all. So that committee is not functioning the way it should, leading to more people saying, we got to get an independent committee.
Now, looking at the travel ban,
yep,
that fell again.
He's 0 for 2 on the travel ban. Some of us are learning, and he may be learning, that to campaign and to govern are quite different things. And to say, I will institute a complete and total ban on all Muslims coming into the country plays well to certain segments of the Trump supporters, but it doesn't wash with people interested in the Constitution.
No matter what he does,
yep,
and I mean, his ego is demonstrated in an interview with Time magazine,
yep,
and obviously the questioning is quite pointed, but he says, I inherited a mess on trade. I mean, we have many, you can go up and down the ladder, but that's the story. Hey, look, in the meantime, I guess I can't be doing so badly, because I'm the president and you're not. You know, say hello to everybody, okay? I mean, that's juvenile.
That's been mentioned more than once in many, many contexts. I mean, he does not have any discipline. He doesn't seem to be constitutionally capable, or it's all a very clever ruse that if he yells enough, he'll get his way. What has worked or not really worked all that well in private sector, not all that well because apparently his debts are enormous, but we don't know, doesn't work in politics.
Now, his poll ratings are down.
Yep.
And a historian called Douglas Brinkley.
Douglas Brinkley, yes.
He's interesting. He's made a couple of comments because he's a student of the presidency.
He is. He is maybe the most highly regarded historian of the American presidency currently on the scene. He's highly regarded. And his last statement was, there's a whiff of treason in the air. Now, we haven't heard that word yet in official circles. For Brinkley to use it, he is a man fairly careful with his phrasing.
So we are talking, therefore, about the Russian connection.
We are.
And the campaign links between Trump and Putin, and
yep,
however obscure they may be. But there's one thing for sure, that the man who was his campaign manager,
yep,
Paul Manafort, was,
yep,
deeply in bed with Yanukovych, the discredited former president of Ukraine, and was taking money, basically, to represent the interests of Russia.
Massive amounts of money, millions of dollars, to represent Russian interests in Ukraine, Yanukovych. And he was the campaign manager for 5 or 6 critical months from late spring to midsummer.
Now, he would claim, maybe quite properly, that that's historical stuff. That's a decade or more ago when I was doing this. I'm a businessman. I move on. I do things. To represent Russian interests is not a treason to the United States.
No, it isn't. It isn't. He has not fully moved on. His chief deputy is still on the White House payroll and has been so throughout. So this isn't ancient history. And, of course, we've got revelations this morning from the Associated Press that the U.S. Treasury Department is looking into Manafort's financial dealings from money coming from Russia to bank accounts in Cyprus and then disappearing to unknown accounts after that.
And this is the problem is what's going on, obviously, between Ukraine and Russia, because yesterday,
yep,
a prominent former Russian MP was shot dead in the middle of Kiev in broad daylight.
Yeah. Yes. He had given an interview Tuesday evening in which he laid out the corruption as he saw it between Putin's Russia and Yanukovych's Ukraine, and he had testified against Yanukovych. And
he had to move out of Russia with his wife, who was a very prominent Russian opera singer. They had to move to Ukraine. They got Ukrainian citizenship.
Yep.
And he said that he actually had been threatened by the Russian security forces.
Well, I mean, he said as recently as Tuesday that he did not think he would be allowed to continue or that he would ever be forgiven. He essentially said, they're coming after me. And
he felt he was dead man walking.
He did, and 36 hours later he was.
And that's why this Ukrainian connection with Yanukovych and Putin and Manafort is so fraught.
It is. Now, nobody has connected this most recent assassination to the Trump campaign itself, but we do have some pretty strong connections, and more are emerging, of Ukraine, pro-Soviet, pro-Russian Ukraine and Putin's Russia connection to the Trump campaign through Manafort, through Carter Page, through Michael Flynn. I mean, there have been a number of connections that we don't have a full picture of yet.
And there's now documentary evidence from Ukraine itself, from an investigator showing what looked like false invoices and payments to Paul Manafort. It's all very, very murky. Finally, his nominee to the Supreme Court. Now, this is one of the aces that a president holds because it can affect laws right into the future, decades ahead, depending on the youth of that Supreme Court judge. And Neil Gorsuch is a young man.
Yes, he is.
But he seemed to give Donald Trump a kick in the teeth.
Well, he is deeply conservative, which bothers the left. But he, as part of that deep conservatism, has a really strong sense of the judiciary as a check on the executive.
Well, let's have a listen to him during his testimony to the Senate.
But Senator, when you attack the integrity or honesty or independence of a judge, their motives, as we sometimes hear, Senator, I know the men and women of the federal judiciary, a lot of them. I know how hard their job is, how much they often give up to do it, the difficult circumstances in which they do it. It's a lonely job, too. I'm not asking for any crocodile tears or anything like that. I'm just saying I know these people and I know how decent they are. And when anyone criticizes the honesty or integrity, the motives of a federal judge, well, I find that disheartening. I find that demoralizing because I know the truth.
So I'm sure Donald Trump heard that.
Yeah.
He cannot be pleased.
No, he can't. It's not the worst thing that has happened to Donald Trump this week, but it does not help his case that Gorsuch is saying that he will support judges, the judiciary, his fellow judges, members of the robe, against overreach by anybody, legislative or executive.
So in a week where his nominee to the Supreme Court faces him down in an unprecedented way, where James Comey, the director of the FBI, faces him down, getting some support from Republicans, but you wonder what's going on in the Republican Party. How long will they tolerate this? I mean, whatever about 4 years, they cannot contemplate 8 years of this.
No, no. And if you consider that many of the Republican Party really have always harbored deep suspicions about Donald Trump anyway, because he's not conservative enough to suit them, and he's not seasoned enough to understand how politics works, an awful lot of Republicans would much prefer a President Pence than a President Trump, to say nothing of, you know, the nuclear worries that would be averted with that. Just as a matter of domestic policy, Mike Pence would be good, safe hands at the right end of the rudder. And so I don't think Donald Trump's support is particularly deep. It was fairly broad for a while. And I mean, the failing to muster enough votes to get the health care reform through on Thursday is already a serious setback for him. And with that bill, every sop he throws to the far right alienates the middle in his own party, people who come from extremely conservative districts and people who come from sort of moderate districts. And if it were somehow to get through the House, and it might, then it's going to go to the Senate, where there are already six senators who have said they will not vote for it, and they only have a margin of two. So the bill is in big, big trouble.
Stephen Knowlton, professor of journalism at DCU, thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure.